Hi there, everyone, and welcome along to this racing postcast. It's Monday, the 28th of June. I'm Maddie Playle, and this week I'm joined by Lee Mottershead and Mark Boylan. And coming up, just to give you a flavour of what we're going to discuss, we're going to talk all things the Irish Derby, a dramatic and exciting race, as well as a big staying handicap in the Northumberland Plate, and some talking points to a couple this week, the first of which, social media abuse. Now, this came to light when Safi Osborne received a truly abhorrent message after riding during the week, causing her father, Jamie, to take a stance and try and take action. So we'll talk a bit about that, as well as Mahmoud Al-Zarouni, the disgraced ex-Godolphin trainer who is making a return to the training ranks in Dubai. So without further ado, let's get straight on into these talking points. First off, with the social media abuse, this is something that Lee, well, in fact, all of us, I'm sure, on this chat have experienced in some degrees. What do you think can be done and what do you think should be done? Because it clearly has a very different effect on different people. But it's just disgraceful, the likes of the messages that Safi Osborne received. What do you think we should be doing about it, Lee?
Well, I think with the Safi Osborne instance, I think there you have a case where the individual who sent her this abhorrent private message on Twitter, that anyone who's seen it really will be horrified. It goes far beyond what you might even probably think you might have been in your worst nightmares. It's terrible. The person who did that had also sent messages of a similar nature to other jockeys. This was not this person's first crime, if you like. And given that this individual has his name on the account, has his picture on the account, it must be very easy and straightforward for the platforms on which he is sending the messages to take action against him. That's the first thing. It shouldn't be hard for that person to be stopped posting messages. But secondly, this should be a police matter. Given you look at what he said, that has to be a criminal act. And so I hope that with Jamie's intervention now, this guy is finally stopped in his tracks, but also punished for what he's done. In a wider sense, Maddie, I wrote my column about this morning about the general tone of social media and the way in which it does make it very hard to have sensible interaction with people. I referenced a pile-on I received back in March. I was making a comment on the Gordon Elliott situation, looking into the Cheltenham Festival. I expressed an idea that, with hindsight, wasn't the best idea I've ever expressed, but I've probably thought of worse in the past. And it caused all sorts of trouble on social media. A lot of it was just people saying, I think you're wrong. And I think nobody minds that, because heck, I'm a column, express ideas. A lot of them will turn out to be rubbish. That's the nature of ideas. What isn't acceptable is for people to just start insulting you and abusing you for it. I had one former jump jockey around that time just come up with a four-letter word on social media. And then to rub salt in the wound, I was criticised by a current professional footballer with a well-known interest in horse racing, who criticised me for an article I hadn't actually written. It was a perfectly reasonable article, but criticised me for an article I hadn't written. When I explained that to him, and when I explained why the article was reasonable, and also congratulated him on a football success, he called me a jumped-up bellend. Now, I might be a jumped-up bellend, Maddie, but I don't think it's right for expressing an idea or an argument on Twitter that someone uses that sort of language. And I just think for sensible debate to take place in that forum, we all have to accept that there are times we might not be right. We have to accept that other people have valid points of views, and we have to be able to debate them in a sensible manner. That doesn't happen so much at the moment. I think politically, things like Brexit and even COVID now have caused people to take extremes and try to avoid the middle ground. But the middle ground is where most sensible debate takes place. And I think within racing and within any other subject, that's where we should try to focus and accept that we might be wrong and accept that people have valid points of view that might not be our own.
Do you think that social media companies need to step up what they're doing and be more proactive in you know, preventing this sort of abuse?
They absolutely do, yeah. And that's why the Racing Post, other racing media groups and other wider media groups took part in a weekend boycott not that long ago. And a lot of people said it was pointless and it wouldn't do any good, and maybe it won't do any good. But unless people raise their voices and say to these companies, this is wrong, you have a responsibility, you can see what some people are doing, do something about it. And they really have to. They have a responsibility to do something. And the Safi Osborne case just highlights why.
Yeah. And Mark, I mean, social media is so unique, isn't it? Because if you were talking to someone in person, it's very different to the sort of reception you'd get across the internet. Well, I certainly think so anyway. And this is just a platform that needs more regulation. But how would you do it?
Sure, it's an impossible question. I don't envy social media companies, but I do think that the reluctance to engage properly on this in terms of, you know, accountability, you know, they can do so much more. I think from a police standpoint as well, I think a lot of the time here, you know, personally, I've never had to go to the police over something relating to social media, but you see in cases, especially over here in Ireland, where people have gone to the police and they're just not sure how to deal with it as well. So I think across the board, both from a social media company standpoint and a police standpoint, the ability to handle these cases properly and see them through to the end where you have some sort of a conclusion, albeit it's very difficult when you can just set up another account again in a different name. You know, I just, as well as that, this isn't a racing specific issue by any means. Like, this is across the board, all different sports. We saw all the sports unite in that blackout for that period. So, you know, I don't think it's something that, obviously, when money is involved, when people have lost money on bets, obviously it's a very, very easy target to go at a rider. It's out of order what's been said in an awful lot of cases. And especially in this case, it is sickening to see. You know, we all know social media can be a great platform for humour, etc. And, you know, there is a healthy debate that can be had there too. But I just find more and more lately that finding that middle ground that Lee is speaking about, I find it tricky to find a lot of the time. So, I don't generally engage myself in that sort of dialogue with people. You know, fair play to you if you're willing to take on those lads and have it out and talk to them and try and tell them your point of view. But I think when you start arguing with an idiot on Twitter, it just ends up with two idiots arguing. You know, it's not my cup of tea.
I'm sure a lot of people are going to be taking that approach in future, such as, you know, the recent trends, the way Lee talked about how polarising a lot of topics have become. Another polarising topic is Mahmoud Al-Zarini returning to the training ranks in Dubai. He's served his 8-year ban, Lee. What can you tell us about this and what it means for racing in general?
So Mahmoud Al-Zarini is returning as a trainer in his native Dubai. Ironically, he's taking over Adiyad, whose previous incumbent has lost his license having had a horse test positive for anabolic steroids, which is quite ironic. Al-Zarini, anyone who knows his name will immediately think of the drugs case that caused him to receive an 8-year ban by the BHA in 2013. Al-Zarini had been an ever more high profile Godolphin trainer alongside Said bin Sarur. He was winning more and more big races. He was having tremendous success. But it turned out he was giving his horses illegal substances. The BHA banned him in a controversial case that was sped through extremely quickly and far too quickly for many people's liking. It was felt that it was a way of trying to reduce the embarrassment levels for Godolphin and Sheikh Mohammed. It certainly wasn't something I think that British racing will look on with pride as a matter of a regulation. But he got the 8-year ban, which was the correct end result. He's now coming back. It is clearly going to be, I think, embarrassing for Godolphin once he comes back. This is a man that brought disgrace on racing and on Godolphin. I'm sure Godolphin would rather he just disappeared from horse racing and wasn't involved in the sport anymore. But the problem is, he served his 8 years. He was given 8 years. And so long as regulators do not have suspicions that his behaviour will be similarly bad in the future, it's hard to see how they can stop him coming back. But it does raise the possibility, presumably, I'd have thought next year, early next year, if he's doing well, he'll have run at the Dubai Racing Carnival up against Godolphin horses on the same stage as Sheikh Mohammed. And then maybe, if he has a horse good enough, that horse might come across to Britain. And I'm sure the BHA wouldn't want to see that. But I'm not sure there's much they can do about it. And as he served his time, I'm not sure there's much that should be done about it, really.
We're going to hear a lot more about this sort of thing going forward, particularly given that Jim Bolger's recent comments about drug cheats in the sport. It seems to me, Lee, you don't think it should be a blanket ban on someone who's seen to be, you know, letting down horse racing in this way.
Oh, no, and I'm not saying that. No, my point is he was given an 8-year ban. I would have preferred him to receive a life ban. I think if you behave in that way and you know the rules, I don't think there's a place for you in horse racing. So I would like to see blanket bans. And I certainly think the sport is better off without that sort of individual. However, he didn't receive a blanket ban. He received an 8-year ban, which is a long period of time. And because he received an 8-year ban and he served 8 years, I'm just not sure there's much wriggle room for regulators.
Okay. And Mark, what's your view?
Yeah, I'd be very much of a zero tolerance stance. I think if there's an intentional breach, you know, obviously you're going to have cases of contamination when you're dealing with livestock. That is par for the course, unfortunately. But where you have an intentional breach, I'd very much be the zero tolerance standpoint and have a lifetime ban. You know, even at the moment when we're speaking about the claims that Jim Bolger has made, obviously we need to put a lot of meat in the bones with what's going forward there over the next few weeks. Hopefully, if Jim Bolger does appear in the Oireachtas, that will shed some light on what's been claimed. And I think when you do go down that road, if racing has to suffer in the short term, I would rather suffer in the short term to have a better long term. But it remains to be seen what'll come of that. But specifically with Al-Zarouni, if he served his time, he served his time. I echo what Lee has said there. If they handed him a lifetime ban and he had to endure that, that's what he had to endure. But he served what he has. So technically, he's entitled to do this. I think it'll be interesting, as long as the racing authorities, where he's setting up in the UAE, are continuing to do their job as effectively as we'd expect. That's all we can hope for. Obviously, the Emirates Racing Authority, if you follow them on social media there last week, they released a number of notices relating to positive tests, a number of different trainers involved. It's well worth a look there to go through. Encouraging, I suppose, that there have been findings there that they are acting upon. But more of that, and across the board in all jurisdictions, transparency, please, and more of it. Can't get enough detail in these sort of cases.
Okay, let's move on to the racing then. And Saturday is Dubai Duty Free Irish Derby. The winner was Hurricane Lane. It didn't look likely in the final stages because Lone Eagle under Frankie Dettori was clear, but the Godolphin colt did end up getting the better of his fellow British raider. Charlie Appleby said his work at home had improved and now options look open. They include the King George, the St. Ledger and the Ark. There was, however, a steward's inquiry and some interference in those closing stages. That impacted the likes of Mojo Star and Earlswood, while the hot favourite High Definition was bitterly disappointing. Aidan O'Brien coming out and saying that could have been to do with something that happened in the early part of the race. What was your main takeaway from this race, Mark?
Yeah, a brilliant race, and fantastic that we had a crowd there to see it, because this sort of finish really would have got them going. It's fantastic to have crowds back at a pilot event like this. Initially, you know, you watch it, you think Frankie has stolen it, albeit that Hurricane Lane is coming home really strongly. But two very, very smart colts. And I think this is, again, testament to Charlie Appleby's ability. Like, he didn't have runners in the 1,000 guineas or the Oaks, but he sent out the 2.46 in the 2,000 guineas, and he said the 1.36 in the Derby at Epsom. And now he's had the Irish Derby winners. It's amazing. He's enjoying a fantastic season. And, you know, a top handler, you know, in the worldwide rankings when we're looking at the best trainers, he has to be right up there with the season that he's having. Yeah, High Definition, you know, I personally thought he was definitely the one to beat going in there. But he's ran bitterly disappointing. But you have to view it as a bit of a non-event for him. It's just such a messy race, as you pointed out, in behind for them. You know, part of you would think, has Frankie gone too soon? But then he stays out of all that trouble in behind. It could have been a golden move, really, and he's very nearly pulled it off. William Buick has tightened up a few rivals in there. I'm not opposed to race riding, but, you know, if a rival had come down on the inside where things were tight enough as they were, with other horses bunching for space, others going backwards, you know, it's... across the board, I think we've spoken on this podcast plenty about, you know, consistency and stewarding. I thought 2 days might have been a little bit lenient. But, you know, as far as performances go, I'd be really excited about this fella going forward. You know, rest of the season, races like the Ledger would be really, really up his tree. I think the way, not just the way he's hit the line, but I think he's got the right tools to go through with a race like that. So, exciting times for that team with Adiar waiting in the wings as well.
Yeah, a very, very good year for Godolphin. Not so much for Bally Doyle. They've had some high-profile disappointments so far this season. Lee, I want to touch more on that interference. It's something that our colleague Chris Cook talked about in his review. He's slamming it, saying it's not good enough. What's your view?
I certainly think that we have to try and deter the win-at-all-costs attitude among jockeys. I'm not alleging that was the case here. But certainly there was an awful lot of damage caused in behind by that manoeuvre. Nobody, I think, would question that the winner was the best horse in the race and deserves to be the winner of the race. But I think stewards have to be constantly vigilant and regulators have to be constantly vigilant about policing this sort of thing. And what's always interesting is that jockeys constantly stress that they want stronger punishments for those jockeys who they perceive to be not riding in a correct and safe way. So I think it is a genuine topic, and it's one I think that will stay front and centre. I think in this instance, my first takeaway though was that here were two really smart colts, Hurricane Lane and Lone Eagle. It was great to see, I think great for the Irish Derby to see a British trained winner of the race. We've only had two in the last 27 years. William Buick has ridden both of them. It was once a case that there was great competition between Britain and Ireland in this race. It hadn't been the case much in recent years. That the winner is very smart, but I think the horse who beat him at Epsom is even smarter. I think this was a boost again to Adiar, who I think I've said on this podcast before, Maddie, I think he's a well above average Derby winner. And I'm very excited about seeing him as the season goes on. I have to say, initially, I was desperately disappointed with High Definition. He looked slow. But having read Aidan O'Brien's explanation that the horse stumbled early in the race, I looked back at the race again this morning, and he actually almost goes down. It was a pretty significant stumble. Now, that might just be unlucky. It might be that he feels like a sort of horse that could always meet that sort of trouble. He's quite slow and a bit cumbersome, but he's definitely better than he was, better than he showed at the Curra. But I think the best horse in that race was also won that race. Albeit I think the second Lone Eagle is very good too, and she had a real turn of foot that the winner didn't actually possess. So they'll both win more good races, I think, as the year goes on.
Yeah, painful for me to talk about, given I was on Lone Eagle. I thought it was all over at the furlong marker. Some Ledger betting, if you're interested. Adiar, 7-2, Hurricane Lane, 4-1. Alan Kerr, Bolshoi Ballet, Lone Eagle and Wordsworth, all at 10s. If you don't want to give up on High Definition, he's a 14-1 chance. Let's go on to talk about the Pretty Polly then now. And again, Aidan O'Brien was beaten in a race that usually... it would be something of a gimme for him. And Thundering Knights got the better of Santa Barbara, the big hype horse, the big three-year-old, the big gamble into that Newmarket 1,000 guineas earlier this season. This was better from Aidan O'Brien's filly. But I think let's talk a bit more about the winner, because she's been really progressive. A first Group 1 winner for Knight of Thunder, which is interesting, especially... given other stallions have had particularly strong years. You look at Frankel, he's now sired the Derby and the Irish Derby winner. But this was a real mark on what Knight of Thunder has achieved. And this filly, she looks like she could be really well suited to the Nassau Stakes. To me, Mark, where do you see her going forward?
Yeah, and she can travel as well. There's plenty of international options. I thought she ran an absolute screamer in Belmont the night that Joseph sent over her and Baron Samedi of the Belmont Gold Cup. Really, really good race. And I think she's just so hardy as well. You're looking at her, she's coming there having her 11th run. And albeit, you know, if you're looking at Santa Barbara from a punter-centric standpoint, you're there and you're frustrated going, God, I've been let down in the Newmarket in the Guineas. You know, she's kind of weakened out of it at Epsom. Now she's had a chance. She's got touched off in another Group 1. But to me, take away her price in those scenarios and she's shaping like a very, very talented filly that is well up to winning Group 1s this season. You know, her inexperience in Newmarket just told when she began to kind of hang out a little bit. Clearly just didn't stay, to my eye anyway, in a strangely kind of run Oaks at Epsom. And you look at her pedigree. I know Camel is there as an influence for stamina, so to speak. But Iridesa was a very effective miler winning the major. And Order of Australia really found his niche when he came back to a mile in the Breeders' Cup mile. I think this furlong, or this trip, I should say, or back to a mile is no problem for Santa Barbara. She has plenty of pace, but I think this is the sort of race that would really have taught her an awful lot, more so than Epsom when the petrol tank just ran out. I'd still remain, although it's kind of hard to say when people are disappointed with her that she's maybe not the second coming, but I still think she's really, really exciting. And look at Aidan's fillies, look how they progress from run to run, even with another season. Sometimes, you know, you see them take another step forward. Like, I'd still remain pretty excited about her in general. I wouldn't judge her too harshly on it, but you know, there comes a point where you have to appreciate the winner as much as talking about the second. And the winner is very, very tough. And whenever there is a 10 furlong to even back to a mile, I wouldn't be too concerned about her. I think she has gears. But, I mean, a mile, 10 furlongs, maybe a little bit further, I wouldn't be worried about her. She's very, very solid, very versatile wherever she goes. Really good performance. And KM Pepper, I think she'll come forward again. Was encouraged to see her run the way she did. I think the market expected a big run. And I wouldn't be giving up on her by any means. There's another day in her this season at 4.
Okay, well, we spoke about the British dominance in the Irish Derby. What about a word on the Railway Stakes, Lee? Because it was won by Go Bears Go, who arguably was a bit unlucky at Royal Ascot, beaten just ahead in the Norfolk. He was on the far side and won within his group. And this was a good story because it was a big win for David Lochnane, but also for Ross Ryan, who was returning from injury.
Yeah, absolutely. So Ross it had a pretty torrid time with a broken collarbone and appendicitis. A real double whammy there. And anyone's had appendicitis will know what sort of pain that brings. So he was just back on Friday. And to win a race like that on Saturday for a trainer who had expressed such joy when winning at Royal Ascot. And for Ross's retaining owner Amma Racing, it was a big win. To see the celebrations of the camp afterwards was really heartwarming. I've got to say, I didn't think Go Bears Go would be winning that race. I thought Kanemoto was my fancy. He was disappointing, but yeah, no, really good to see two young racing professionals who have got big futures ahead of them, combining to win a race like that. They'll win far bigger races, I think, than the Railway Stakes over the years to come. And they are going places.
Yeah, and Amma Racing have quickly become a very powerful outfit, haven't they? I'm sure that won't be their last big success. Let's take a breather because we have plenty more to discuss, including a possible July Cup candidate we're going to discuss just after this.
Members Club is the ultimate resource for racing enthusiasts and punters, brought to you by The Racing Post. Get access to The Racing Post digital newspaper every day from 9 p.m, plus exclusive content including expert tips, analysis, form study tools, and more. Head to racingpost.com and click subscribe to find out more.
Over to Newcastle there now then, and the ITV action began and took place with the Chip Chase Stakes. It was won by Chill Chill, a really competitive event this. Andrew Boulding saying afterwards, now the filly is too high for the Stewards Cup, which was her initial target, and now the July Cup could beckon. Now that's going to be a real exciting race, especially if we get to see Rohan, who obviously couldn't run in the Commonwealth Cup against the likes of Campanelli and Dragon Symbol. How do you think Chilchil will fit into that race, Lee?
Well, we gave her a big up for the Chip Chase Stakes in this podcast last week, but I think the leap from a Chip Chase to a July Cup is significant. And if I'm being honest, Maddie, I would be surprised if she was good enough to really figure in the finish of a July Cup. She's progressive, and she's a filly who's progressing as well. And when they get on a roll, who knows where it can end. But if you look at the July Cup, all being well, we're going to have Oxted, we're going to have Starman, Dream of Dreams, Dragon Symbol, maybe Creative Force, maybe just say Rohan. There are a lot of good horses in what could be a deep July Cup. And could I see Chill Chill improving to beat all of them? No, I couldn't.
Okay, a 25-1 shot roughly, if you disagree with Lee. Let's go on to the consolation race for the big handicap then, the Northumberland Bars. It was won in impressive fashion by Z-Band, who had headgear on. He boasts an entry, interestingly, at Newmarket on Friday. But I think the key to this horse is, could he be an Ebor horse, given his connections? Sheikh Mohammed Abeid Al Maktoum, the owner, just like last year's winner. And Andre Zaney and Roger Varin teaming up with this horse on Saturday. Mark, what did you make of this performance?
Yeah, the visor seemed to really sharpen him up. Like the way he went about his business now. You know, I'd say early part of the race, Andrea might have wanted to be sitting a little bit closer, possibly. He wasn't the quickest away. But God, he really was strong at the line when it mattered. I think as a performance, it's obviously his first time up to 2 miles. I wouldn't be scared about going back down and tripping him because he has gears, but at that sort of trip, I mean, if you can hold on to a turn of foot like that, for all that he was a well-handicapped horse, so approved. I think there's another chunk of improvement to come from this fella. I was impressed by the way he went about it. Like, obviously, tougher tests are going to lie ahead for him. But no, this was a pretty likeable performance. And by the Sea of the Stars, I think the dam won over a mile and a half as well. She's related to a stayer as well. So there's encouragement there that could have the makings of been a step above this again. So looking forward to seeing how he progresses as the season goes on. Only a second run of the year.
Indeed, it seems connections have always thought a lot of him as well. Now, there was a big win in the William Hill Northumberland Plate for Jim Goldie. He's had a great year with the likes of Euk and Glenn, and he compared his stable start to the winner, Nicholas T, who came from a remarkable position to win under Ben Robinson at 33-1, hooded for the first time. And maybe that could have made the difference because he was settled right towards the rear and came with a strong late run to beat Hochfeld at 28-1 and Island Brave, although he finished third, was then demoted to fourth, so Rajinsky eventually filling that place. Trushan, the top weight, he was sent off the 5-2 favourite. He could only finish sixth, but by no means a bad run. What do you think about this year's Northumberland Plate, Lee, and how does it compare to previous renewals? Because the trainer clearly thinks Nicholas T is still very, very useful, despite the fact he's 9.
Yeah, well, Jim Gold is even older than 9, and I think he's even more useful. I think Jim is a really good trainer. And he showed that again here today. He's very clever, very shrewd. He's got a horse here who hadn't run over the trip before, but did plenty of races last year over 7 furlongs and a mile. So had lots of pace. But Jim was saying after the race that if you look back to his previous start at Newcastle in November last year, won by nearly 5 lengths, very impressively. This had been the target ever since. Came here via winning that good amateur ladies race at York in the middle of the month, and it was a tremendous performance. She had a super turn of foot to win Red Hot competitive handicap in a time 5 seconds quicker than the consolation race. Loads to like about that. You'll seldom see a horse look like he's sticking out his neck more than Nicholas T did as well in the closing stages. You look at him as well, that was his 65th race. He had so much racing. He had his initial races in bumpers, in national flat races. So he's had a heck of a life as Nicholas T. This was his crowning moment. You'd imagine he might well drop down in trip now. He's actually in the John Smith's Cup, and Jim Goldie being Jim Goldie, I wouldn't be surprised if he goes there. But the way he won it, you wouldn't be surprised if he wins another big handicap at some point in the future.
Yeah, testament to a fabulous trainer, and he's clearly got to the bottom of a bit of a quirky horse. Now, who have we got for the notebook? I'm going to jump in first. I want to nominate one particular horse because I was really, really impressed by her, and that was Inspiral at Newmarket on Saturday. beautiful pedigree out of Star Scope. And I just thought this filly produced a really nice effort on debut to beat some other similarly well-bred types. Just sort of picked up well, but then seemed to find another gear when she hit the rising ground. I wouldn't be surprised if Cheveley Park have got another superb filly on their hands in this one. And she was sent off the 2-1 joint favourite as well. So they were clearly expecting a performance like that. And I'm like looking forward to seeing her in Patton Company next time. Mark, who have you got for us?
Yeah, I thought that the Open and Maiden at the Curragh on Friday would prove to be probably an obvious one. It proved to be a real race that throws up so many winners. And the runner-up, Cowboy Justice, I thought when all kind of clicked with him, and he came home very nicely for Jessica Harrington. Well-bred by Lope de Vega. Nice individual to look at physically as well, just from what I could see on the TV. And yeah, I think he'll take a fair bit of beating wherever he goes next in the Maiden, barring that he bumps into another one like he did. That Beauty Inspire that won for Gerard Innes was very impressive, very taken. But just got the feeling the Cowboy Justice, hailing from a stable where the juveniles are arguably improving a fair deal over the first runs, I'd say. I don't want to make a general statement. I think across the board this year, they're coming forward a nice bit from their first runs of the year. And Cowboy Justice, I think he's a winner in waiting, hopefully, for the Jessica Harrington team.
Yeah, interesting you mentioned that team, because Discoveries, a filly who's a sister to Alf Centauri, full sister, in fact, to that filly.
She was good, wasn't she? Yeah.
Yeah, she made a winning second start at the Curragh.
Actually, on the same card, I must give a mention, if you've stayed on the ice cold and Alex train by now, I have to tip my hat to you. You deserve a medal for your patience. And if you did, you got rewarded with 14-1 the other day. But possibly the most heartbreaking horse in training to follow. But he's a dude. I was absolutely delighted for him and connections to get his head in front of the same card. So a bit of a cult hero, I suppose, for some, or one that you'll be kicking the cat out the window now if you're backing him on a regular basis. But absolutely delighted to see guys called Alex get his head in front. That was really enjoyable.
Yeah, it was enjoyable, wasn't it? He's very much a popular horse who punters would be familiar with. Lee, take it away. Who's your main horse to sort of focus on that we haven't talked about just yet?
Well, I think one worth following, Maddie, from the weekend was a horse whose name I'll probably mispronounce, but Aesthet. Won the opening race at Chester on Saturday. It was only a pretty ordinary 7.5 furlong novice contest, but I thought the horse travelled particularly well in the hands of Danny Tudhope. Wearing blinkers the first time, they seemed to help him. But it's only his fifth start. He was having his second start for Rafe Beckett, was trained last season by Michael Bell, was acquired by his new owners for not too much money, 40 grand, which in the great scheme of things in this weird and wacky sport is not too much. And I think they'll have some fun with him. He was rated 78 going into that novice race. You'd imagine he'd be a little bit higher than that now. But the way he travels just makes you think there's probably a nice handicap in him somewhere. Maybe a race around Goodwood, somewhere like that, where pace and the ability to move through a contest well is useful. So I think the winner of the opening race at Chester on Saturday, however you pronounce his name, is one to follow.
Thank you very much, Lee. Now onwards to one of the highlights of the whole flat season coming up this weekend, the Coral Eclipse. It could be a real cracker. We've got Mishriff in there, Snowfall, Lord North, Love, Armory, Adabe, St Mark's Basilica, even Palace Pier holds an entry. I'm sure all of them aren't going to turn up, but we're going to discuss who's going to play a main part just after this.
Be sure to watch Racing Post Live with Betfair for racing reaction, tips and discussion live every Saturday afternoon on the Racing Post YouTube channel.
Now, this really would be the stuff of dreams if all of these horses turned up at Sandown on Saturday. This race has treated us to some superb additions in recent years. Do you remember Ulysses? He got the better of a bombing finish with Barney Roy. Then we had Roaring Lion, Enable, and even Gaia so dominant in the race last year. Mishriff, I feel like he hasn't quite got the credit he's deserved, perhaps because we've seen him more on the international stage, Lee, but I think this could be just a huge, huge win for a horse who's building a real incredible CV now in Mishriff. What's he going to be like as a stallion prospect if he can win an Eclipse and add that to his form book?
Well, I mean, when you think, Maddie, that what he's achieved on dirt and on turf. That you'd think is bound to make him appealing to breeders. I'm not a huge bloodstock guru, but I think if you based it solely on his race record, a horse who's won a Saudi Cup, a Dubai World Cup, and a French Derby, and now potentially more big races on turf through Europe this year, I think he's sure to be appealing. I mean, look what he's done for Connections too. His earnings so far, £10.2 million. Remarkable. And David Egan, a young jockey, you know, he's earned more in two wins than some people will earn in a lifetime. So it's an amazing story. I think he will be, regardless of whoever comes up against him, I think he's going to be the one to beat in this Eclipse. As we are recording this podcast now, we haven't seen the Monday forfeits for the race, so we're slightly guessing. Aidan O'Brien had a number of high-profile horses entering the race. I don't think we were expecting Snowfall to turn up, but he had Mark's Basilica, he had Love, he had Armory, so lots of good horses. I think a key factor in this race will be the ground. I'm about 5-6 miles away from Sandown. It bucketed down here last night. Andrew Cooper, the clerk of the course, was reporting the round course to be good to soft in places. Today, there's more rain forecast across Monday, Tuesday. Then things dry up, although there is a chance of further showers at the end of the week. But I am hoping, Maddie, that what we are going to have is a Dabe ground. He was 10-1 this morning. That was too big a price, and those odds have gone down, because if a Dabe gets his ground, he's an extremely good racehorse. Ran to a Racing Post rating of 126 in the Champion Stakes last season on really deep ground. It won't be that deep, whatever rain we get this week, because it's a summer and you don't get that deep autumn ground. He would need cutting the ground to run. William Haggie said last week, good to soft would be the bare minimum, but he is smart on quicker ground. He beat Very Elegant for a second time in the Queen Elizabeth Stakes at Randwick in April. He wants the mud ideally. I'm hoping he gets it, because he's a horse that doesn't always get his conditions in this part of the world, particularly at this time of year. But if he does get them, I think Sandown is a track that's made for him. He won a Group 2 over a mile as a younger horse. And I just hope we get enough rain this week for Dave to run, because if he does, I think he can win the Eclipse.
Fantastic. So a bit of it's crazy to say about a horse who's achieved as much as him, but almost a bit of a dark horse there from Lee. He likes a Dabe, another Globetrotter. We've really got the international appeal in this year's Eclipse. Now, I might throw you a hospital pass here, Mark, but who do you think Aidan O'Brien is likely to run? Because he had no issue running Love and Armory against each other in the Prince of Wales Stakes. Do you think that's going to be the case again, or is St Mark's Basilica going to come in? It sounds like Lee thinks Snowfall isn't going to run.
I think I'd easier pick the Euro Millions numbers, but I'd say going through them, like, I mean, he has a lot of 3-year-olds entered up there as well. You'd imagine something will take his chance. I think from the 3-year-olds, I should say, I think Armory would make sense if the ground was quick. I think, you know, 10 furlongs, quick ground would be right up history. He'd be very high on my shortlist if he did. If the conditions were like that and he turned up. Thought he ran really well to finish where he did at Ascot, considering how tactical it was, how Ryan controlled it on the front on Love. I didn't think that race was run to suit. I think if they went a proper good gallop, he'll be right up there with them. You know, others that are there, like, I mean, I think if a Japan or a Mogul are, you know, going down to the likes of Broome, if they turn up, they're not going to, I don't think Broome is in there, actually, he's in the King George, I was just mixing it up. Battleground, I wouldn't be jumping up and down with them. Bolshoi Bally would be interesting, but you got the sense that they wanted to give him time. Now, maybe this is enough time, but I might be a little bit surprised if he turned up. Same on High Definition, they said they were going to give him a break until the autumn. So I'm just kind of crossing them off the list. Like, St Mark's Basilica would make sense coming here as a 3-year-old. The pull at the weights is always attractive to me at this time of year in the Eclipse. I don't know. Maybe he's going to take a chance with a filly, but I'd be kind of in Lee's camp. I thought maybe Snowfall, the step up to a mile and a half, was so effective last time it was worth staying there. So be interesting. And Love is the big one. You don't know. You know, my gut would be that I would nearly rather see her back up to a mile and a half back of the track where she's won previously in the King George. I thought that would make sense. And this comes a little bit sooner, you know, increasing the possibility of a bounce. But you know, it's really anyone's guess what he runs. But to me, if the ground was on anyway on the sharp side, I'd be a big fan of Armoury. And otherwise, it opens up the door. I don't think Adabe is a crazy shout by any means. He'd be definitely high on the shortlist too if conditions did turn up anyway, cutting the ground. I would say Mishriff, just one thing to bear in mind, like he's John Gosden and Thady, they seem to have taken the view that, you know, it's obviously an unorthodox start to the season for maybe horses that are running these sort of races over here. Just last year, he had a couple of runs there. It was a 3 runs last summer. He went Newmarket, Chanty, Deauville, and then he disappointed at Ascot after a bit of a break. Just be interested to see how he's come into this, or whether there is a possibility for him not perhaps delivering his very best off the back of this. You would imagine he would have been trained hard to go to Saudi, to go to Medan. So be interesting to see how forward he is off the back of a break. So be interested to keep an eye on vibes from the Gosden camp during the week.
That Shima Classic win since been boosted by Love's Only You winning the QE2 Cup in Hong Kong, and Chronogenesis victorious just a couple of days ago in the Takarazuka Kinen. Hopefully I'm pronouncing that right. Apologies if not. The betting seems to suggest St Mark's Basilica will be the Aidan O'Brien chosen one, and that would make sense given what both Lee and Mark have said about the ground. We've not spoke about Lord Northley. How do you think he's going to enjoy it if conditions are a little bit softer? I couldn't really see why he was a non-runner at Ascot. Can you shed any light on that?
No, I mean the ground was given. The ground was given as the reason. It was obviously very quick at the start of the week, so he was ruled out for that reason. But he also doesn't want the other extreme, very soft. So I'd imagine that John and Thady Gosden would be looking at the weather forecast as the week goes on to make a decision on him. I thought it was a real shame he didn't go to Ascot, because for me, that was his big chance. I don't think he is an absolute superstar over a mile and a quarter. And by that, I mean, I think when we get to races like the Judmont International and the Irish Champion Stakes, there's a fair chance there'll be one or two who are too good for him. And I think had the ground been right, he would have had a chance against Love on her seasonal reappearance at Ascot. So I just worry that with him, the ground has ruled out his best chance over here. That said, he won a fortune in Dubai in March. So he need do nothing else, though. He could go off on his holidays for the rest of the year, put his feet up and read a book, and he'd have more than done his job for the season.
Yeah, and as a gelding, of course, they may be thinking about perhaps next year keeping him in training. So it's a race that looks really dominated by John and Thady Gosden and Aidan O'Brien. I suppose it's the downfall of having all these excellent horses in the same stable. But let's hope at least a good handful of the real top-notchers stand their ground in the Coral Eclipse. Now, before then, I'm going to challenge Lee and Mark to fish out a nap for us. Who have you got, Mark, first up?
I'm going to head to Tipperary on Wednesday. The declarations filtered through this morning. I was just scanning through them. The one that I'd keep an eye on there is Eros and Psyche for Kieran Cotter in the 6:15. Very fast colt. Already proven at the track, having won his maiden. He was a bit of a surprise winner that day. He can get hot beforehand now. He's even a handful in the stalls. He's previously unseated rider when he was down at the gates, if I remember correctly. I think it was on the all-weather. But his run at Cork last time at a huge price, I didn't think there was any fluke about that, to be quite honest. And Dickie Duda, the runner-up, has showed up well at Ayr since as well. I thought Quarantine Dreams, that was in behind, ran a cracker at the Curragh, only beaten 2 lengths by Romantic Proposal in the dash. And the winner, Logo Hunter, speaks for himself. He's a top sprinter over here. So I just thought this was slightly calmer company for him. Highest rated horse in the race. 3-year-old, a little bit more upside to him. Thought he made a lot of sense. So Eros and Psyche, even though he comes with a little bit of risk attached in the 6:15 at Tipperary on Wednesday.
Okay, fantastic. And Lee, who's caught your eye among the entries?
Who's caught my eye among the entries? Well, I think there's a whole, it's not so much a nap, Maddie, but a really interesting horse to look out for. At Sandown on Friday, 7 furlong, 2-year-old maiden, there's a horse in there called Dukedom, trained by John and Thady Gosden, ridden by Frank Dettori. The reason he's interesting is this is a Dubawi call out of a mare called Nathra, who won the Nell Gwynn Stakes a few years ago, finished off her career by finishing second in the Queen Elizabeth II Stakes. Subsequent to that, John Warren paid 270,000 guineas for her at the sales, and it turns out that was for the Queen. Now, the Queen's not someone I think of as getting really involved much at the sales, but she bought this mare. Dukedom is the first product of the mare, and I'd be really interested to see him make his debut at Sandown on Friday. Also on Friday, and another John and Lady Gosden horse I'd be interested in. He's called Liverpool Knight, be ridden by Holly Doyle for her retaining owners. Looks for all the world like he will improve from mile 6 furlongs, which he gets on Friday. The one stumbling block is there are two horses in the race trained by Sir Mark Prescott, who'd be running on the £6 penalties, who'd won their last two races. So it could mean there's no point looking anywhere else but the chosen one of Sir Mark Prescott. But if Liverpool Knight runs, I think he'll improve on what he's shown so far. But Dukedom, that newcomer on Friday, I think he's one well worth looking out for.
Indeed, we saw Palace Pier win his first two races impressively at Sandown. Perhaps that horse can follow suit. It is a track where John and Thady Gosden like to run their better juveniles. That's all we've got time for on today's show. As usual, please make sure you rate, review and subscribe. Bruce will be back on Friday. Fingers crossed those entries to the Coral Eclipse live up to what could be a sensational race. We'll see you again next week to talk about all the fallout. Bye-bye.